This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, a couple of guests. Representative John Rose from Tennessee joins us. Also, Dr. Kathy Simmons, Chief Veterinarian, National Cattlemen's Beef Association. That's all ahead in just a moment. First off, Kate Zook is a program analyst, USDA's Office of Energy and Policy.
There's three scales that we typically do that on at USDA, and those are the national scale, the program scale, and the entity scale. And if you look at the top, at a very high level, what we're doing is we're taking activity data on how are farmers producing food? Are they using those practices that we just talked about? And then feeding that data into models and tools which provide us estimates of the greenhouse gas emissions coming from the sector based on that management. And we feed that into a variety of reports and assessments.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by the Honorable John Rose from Tennessee, 6th Congressional District, I believe. Is that right?
That's right. The northeastern quadrant of Middle Tennessee.
So when we talk about that 6th District and agriculture, what will we find?
Well, it's historically very diversified. We have some row crop areas of the district, but rolling hills, some rocky soils, particularly where my farm is. So beef cattle, historically tobacco, burley tobacco. Still have one of the largest burley producing counties in the country in my district. So, but like my farm, historically fairly diversified.
Interesting when we talk about ag and Tennessee, because not only are you a farmer, but you actually worked for farmers in Tennessee, didn't you?
Well, so I worked briefly as our Commissioner of Agriculture for a period fairly early in my life when I was in my mid-30s, and a great opportunity to learn about agriculture from that perspective and how government interfaces with farmers. And I'm trained as an ag economist. That was my original pursuit in life, and ended up taking a turn and ending up in the IT training business, and before that got a law degree. But throughout that time, I pursued my interest of maintaining our family farm legacy, which goes back to 1790. I'm the eighth generation.
We look at the district right now, and we're seeing wide swings. Most of the time when we go east or west of the Mississippi, it's extremely dry. And back to the east, we find it's a little wetter. What are you finding in your area?
So, you know, being up here, it's hard to keep your finger on the pulse. But we have a number of areas in the district that are dry and need rain. Probably not as severe as some areas of the country, but it's becoming a factor here. I just was visiting with one of our major row crop producers in the western end of my district who said, corn crop already damaged. Even if we get good rain from here out, probably some reduction in yield because of the dry weather that we've had there in the district.
A common theme, whether it's Congress or the administration, has been climate change. And we've seen that pop up in many different areas. But probably one of the most interesting areas has been the SEC, and we're not talking about football. We're talking about the Securities and Exchange Commission. What's happening there?
Well, so we have an activist chair of the SEC in Chair Gensler, who I think is trying to use the SEC to effectuate kind of the liberal agenda, the progressive agenda when it comes to climate change. So they have proposed a rule that would be very sweeping across the economy and particularly impact farmers, I believe, in a negative way, that would require public companies to report their impact on the climate. But where it really sweeps broadly is that it includes something called Scope 3 emissions, whereby publicly traded companies would be required to get information from their suppliers and their customers, both upstream and downstream in the value chain, and that would reach most farmers in this country.
Is it safe to say that most farming operations could not provide that information at this point?
Well, they're certainly not currently equipped. And I think one of the pitfalls of this proposed rule is that nobody really knows how to count these emissions presently or calculate them. And so you're going to have farmers who already have their hands full doing what they do, being asked to provide information when it's unclear exactly what that information should be, what it should encompass, how to calculate it. And of course, the SEC hasn't really thought carefully through how to eliminate duplicative reporting, that sort of thing. So it's not really clear how this is going to be helpful or useful. And frankly, it's the Securities and Exchange Commission, not the Securities and Environment Commission. And so they're outside of their lane and in a way that I think is not helpful. That's a decision Congress needs to make if it wants to enlarge the province of the Securities and Exchange Commission. They have their hands full. They have a job, an assigned job they've had since the 30s, which is to provide for safe and efficient capital markets, protect investors, and facilitate the formation of capital. And if they're not attending to their number one priority, you have to believe that number one priority is probably not going to get addressed in the way that it should. And they don't have the expertise or knowledge or resources to effectuate environmental policy in the way that they're envisioning here.
So if this is a road the SEC is looking at least building, maybe not paving yet, what options does the ag industry, what options does Congress have?
Sure. Well, so I think, obviously agriculture will be the object of this new regulatory overreach by the SEC. So we have to work, I think it's the job of me and others in Congress, to advocate for the SEC to draw back from this, to stay in their lane. But there'll probably be litigation on this issue, and certainly the recent decision in West Virginia versus the EPA, I think, would point to the courts maybe coming to the aid here and saying this is beyond the scope of what the SEC has been empowered to do. And that's certainly our hope. But I think we'll work hard on the congressional side. Certainly we've been advocating. I was joined by more than 100 members on a bipartisan basis in urging Chair Gensler and the SEC to back away from this expansive proposal. We've got other legislative efforts afoot to try and restrict what the SEC does here. And I think it's kind of address this on all fronts.
So good to see you. Thanks for the work you're doing. We wish you the best.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure being with you today.
Okay. He represents the 6th Congressional District of Tennessee, the Honorable John Rose, on today's Agribusiness Report.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Dr. Kathy Simmons, who is Chief Veterinarian with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Great to see you.
Good to see you, Tony.
Okay, so it is a little warm in D.C. right now.
Yes.
And I guess that's to be expected in summer.
It's typical. That's why Congress goes home in August when it's hot and humid and nobody wants to be here.
Do you mind if I ask about your days before coming to NCBA? Because, speaking of Congress, you've got some experience there, right?
I did. I worked for a year in the United States Senate in a member office for Senator Olympia Snow from Maine. And chiefly I did human health policy there. And to be quite honest with you, Tony, thanked every day that I was a veterinarian and not a physician. Lots of problems with Medicare, Medicaid, and CHIP.
Which is a good segue into what we're talking about today. And it is an issue that veterinarians are getting involved in. We're talking ticks, but we're not talking about a tick we normally talk about, are we?
No, we aren't. We're talking about an exotic invasive tick that we first identified here in the United States in 2017, but we think it may have been here as early as 2010, the Asian longhorn tick. The Asian longhorn tick has currently been identified in 17 states, mostly in the eastern United States and southern United States. It is a tick that has the potential to carry disease, as most ticks do. It is also a little different in that this tick is smaller than a sesame seed, so it can be hard to see. When it's engorged or filled with blood, it can be the size of a pea. But the biggest thing about this tick is it does not require a male to reproduce. So a single female can establish a population. There are over 25 hosts that we've identified in the United States, including birds. So the mobility of this tick is quite wide.
So would this be too obvious a question to ask? If it's that small, how do we know it's infecting a herd?
Well, you tend to see clusters of these ticks on the animals because there are so many of them. In a pasture that's infested, they will be on blades of grass. And if you walk through there, they will be on you. So you can identify them. You can see them. You can feel them if they're on you, crawling. And it is a tick that pasture control, I think, is going to be important, as is control on the animal. This is a three-host tick, which means that each of the stages, the larva, the nymph, and the adult, has a different host. So it will drop off into the environment between its life stages. Therefore, the environment is a key in control.
Now, this is there's quite a bit of information here. Is there any way that we can kind of learn more about this?
Yes, there is. Happy to have you ask me that question, Tony, because NCBA has partnered with the United States Department of Agriculture, and we're putting on a two-day webinar, August 23rd and 24th. You can register for this free webinar at ncba.org, and it will cover ticks in general with a specific focus on the Asian longhorn tick. We will have several speakers. We will have speakers who are state animal health authorities in some of the states where this tick has been identified. How are they dealing with the tick? How are they dealing with some of the associated diseases that this tick can carry for cattle? We also will have the chief veterinary officer for the United States speak a little bit on how they are looking to try to normalize the response to this invasive tick. Currently, USDA APHIS has monthly calls where they are partnering with the states for surveillance. These states are out dragging for ticks, looking to identify these ticks and reporting where they find them in the state and on what hosts they find them.
Finding things. Maybe this is a good segue. I hope I did that right. Beagle Brigade.
Oh, the Beagle Brigade. They are some of our more ardent protectors of disease for this country. We have beagles through USDA, Department of Homeland Security, and these beagles are trained to sniff out contraband, let's say, so that when we were worried so much about African swine fever, and we still are coming into this country, if any kind of pork products would be carried in luggage, hopefully, you know, coming in, these beagles walk through. If you've been to the airport, you'll see them. They're sniffing. They're sniffing baggage. They're sniffing people's purses. They're, you know, sniffing around in general, looking for anything that shouldn't be there. Now, of course, there are training centers for these beagles, and funding is necessary for that. So NCBA is among a host of folks in agriculture who have signed on to support funding for these beagles. And if you've ever seen their official pictures, they are quite nice. They are proudly sitting up with the background of the American flag. And they have names and identification, just like any officer would, that serves the general public. So we're really proud of these little dogs. They do a great job. They don't ask for much. An occasional pat on the head and a biscuit will get you a job well done.
Is it a little amazing that animals bring so much to our everyday lives? I mean, we normally focus on cattle and beef here.
Right.
But just the fact that really it runs through so many different species and the way they impact our life.
Well, and I think, too, we look upon this whole concept of one health being health in our animals, health in our humans, and health in the environment, and how those all interact and come together. And as we look to try to battle some of these emerging diseases that we see coming with a global movement that we have now in the world, we look to understand better diseases in animals to protect humans against disease.
So good to see you. Thanks for all the good information.
Good to see you as well. Thanks a lot.
Again, it's Dr. Kathy Simmons, Chief Veterinarian, National Cattlemen's Beef Association, on today's Agribusiness Report.
Equip your fleet with the high-capacity Manitou 2550 RT track loader from Livingston Machinery. This all-terrain track loader helps you excavate and transport different materials with ease and precision. For operator comfort, the 2550 RT provides an ergonomic cab and an excellent 360-degree visibility, perfect for any job. Learn more at livingstonmachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
When you grow cotton, you need a heavy-hitting harvest aid, something that delivers rapid desiccation that has powerful performance and safe handling. That something is Reviton herbicide. What's more, Reviton comes with a low use rate for greater convenience and efficiency. Hammer home this year's cotton harvest with Reviton. Learn more at helmcrop.com/Reviton. Always read and follow label directions.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Hear more of our interviews from Washington, D.C. online, allagnews.com.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
If you don't push yourself, how will you know what you're really made of? Cotton Research and Promotion Program works to develop innovative performance technologies that redefine cotton's capabilities and helps athletes push themselves further. Cotton Incorporated is working hard to educate consumers about cotton's versatility, especially in the athletic apparel market. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton. It's the Agribusiness Report.
A USDA conservation program, the Grazing Lands Conservation Initiative, is making a return nationally after years as a state-level offering.
There's a recognition now, especially with the opportunities that we have before us with addressing climate, that a national approach to help reinvigorate that would be very useful.
Natural Resources Conservation Service Associate Chief Lewis Aspey says applications are now being accepted through September 22nd for up to $12 million in CLGI funding of various collaborative conservation projects on private lands.
The specific initiative, the best opportunity would be to go to grants.gov, and you can see the particulars of the application on there, the application period, the requirements, and so forth.
Local NRCS offices also have more information on the Grazing Lands Conservation Initiative. Aspey says project awards should be announced in mid-November. Project duration is 1 to 2 years in length. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.